Hello and welcome to the first ever episode of the Punchin' Pod, your home of all things combat sports. My name's Sam Brady and I'm joined by my good friend Oscar Pip. Oscar, how are we?
I'm good, thanks Sam. Ready to get the first episode underway. And we've got quite an interesting topic to talk about. So one that a lot of people can sink their teeth into.
Yeah, I'm quite excited for this one, actually. I know we've been talking about sort of this idea for the past couple of weeks now. And this week, we have a very big fight happening over in Saudi Arabia. Tyson Fury, Francis Ngannou. And that's the thing. It's kind of the both worlds have collided, boxing and MMA. And that's sort of what the idea of this podcast is, what we're trying to do here, Oscar.
Yeah, exactly. I think ultimately, whether you're a boxing fan or a UFC fan, everyone's eyes will be on the fight on Saturday, mainly just through pure intrigue, I think. No one really knows what's going to happen. The majority of people will predict a Tyson Fury stoppage, I'd imagine. But ultimately, Francis Ngannou, never been seen in a boxing ring before. And as you say, it gives us a chance to talk about the wider discussion in terms of Saudi Arabia hosting big heavyweight boxing fights and what that means for the sport going forward.
Yeah, I mean, we spoke earlier about the feeling around this fight. It's sort of excitement wouldn't be the right word which you normally get from these heavyweight fights. But we said intrigue, and you've got obviously the lineal heavyweight champion of the world, arguably the greatest heavyweight of all time, against Francis Ngannou, who's making his professional boxing debut. Even though we kind of expect what's going to happen, how will Francis Ngannou cope? And can he do the unthinkable? What do you expect to see on Saturday as an event as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, obviously this isn't the first time they've taken a big heavyweight fight to the Middle East. We've seen it before with Anthony Joshua against Alexander Usyk in the rematch. Most the media that attended that fight would say that ultimately you're not going to get a bare pit of an atmosphere where the fans are obviously having a few bevs and they're getting all rowdy. That's obviously not going to happen. But what they did say was the fans were still very engaged with what was happening in the ring. And in terms of the event itself, it's going to be a lot of glitz and glamour in terms of, which is a reflection of the amount of money that's been injected into this one on Saturday. But in terms of the atmosphere, you're not going to see, in this country, we're known for packing out stadiums and delivering some of the craziest atmospheres. You just can't expect that in Saudi Arabia. But I think you're going to see a lot of engaged fans nonetheless.
Yeah, and I think because of the amount of money they have, almost resources are limitless for them. So they can put on this big production level of an event to attract fans. And that's ultimately part of the reason why fights are going over to Saudi and why the golf and the F1 and the football are going over to the Middle East. Now the Middle East is, and we'll touch on it later in the pod, but it's sort of now the Middle East is in the spotlight. So of course they're going to want to make it an event and make themselves look good. So that's why the production value is going to be the highest you can get. And as I said, the money they've got, it's limitless, really, the resources. It's the start of the Riyadh season as well in the next coming days. And this fight is commencing that. So I know Frank Warren's mentioned that a lot, how like this fight is celebrating the Riyadh season. Many sports fans would probably say like they don't know much about the sporting culture in the Middle East, but I'm sure there is one. And I'm sure they love sports over there. I think it was Dana White. I saw a clip saying he loves Abu Dhabi. They just had the UFC on the weekend at Yas Island, and he says they're crazy about fighting over there, but you just would never know.
Well, it's interesting, obviously, with Riyadh season commencing, because this is a new sports/entertainment initiative that is being launched by Saudi Arabia. And as you kind of alluded to there, it's all centered around bringing tourism over to the country through sport. And sport is one of the most effective ways of doing that. If you want eyeballs on a certain event, why not stick a ring in the middle of a arena? So, I think that's interesting in itself. And it's interesting you mentioned Dana White's comments there. I think a lot of boxers have also made their opinions known in terms of wanting to fight in Saudi Arabia. You had Hamza Shiraz, who is a middleweight prospect in this country, who was on the George Groves boxing podcast. And he said himself, being a Muslim fighter, he'd love the opportunity to fight in Saudi Arabia. Roxana Begum, who I interviewed recently, she said the exact same thing. So I think obviously when we are having this conversation about sports washing and how impactful it is in a often negative way, there's also the athletes out there who are grateful for the opportunity in some way. So it's a double-edged sword in some ways. In terms of mainstream media covering the event, I think everyone's kind of handling it with caution. Like, make no mistake about it, and we've already established this, it's a huge event that's going to attract a lot of people. But I think certain media outlets will be cautious about how they go about covering the event in terms of the fact that it is happening in the Middle East. And you've got that whole conversation around sports washing in Saudi Arabia. I think certain outlets are less keen on the event because of that reason. But with the promotion, I don't think it's been too bad, really. I don't know if you saw the promo clip that they released, where it was showing Fury and Ngannou in training
TNT
camp.
TNT Sport was that?
Yeah, TNT. Yeah. And you had Fury hitting the heavy bag, and Francis feeling it in his bed.
Well, it's the baddest man on the planet, which sounds a bit dramatic, and you know. But...
Oh, that is corny. That is a very corny headline. Is baddest man? I think you've got quite a few people who would take issue with that, but. Yeah, with the promotion, I think it's been eye-catching without having much substance behind it.
Yeah.
And that's talking strictly about the promotion.
Can Francis land, never mind win, land something on Tyson?
You have a lot of, so the media outlets that are actually covering this event, you say, oh, all it takes is one punch, like, it's heavyweight boxing, one punch can change everything. So I think,
I know you hate that saying though.
Oh, I do, because it's just not true. Like,
is it not true for this fight though? Is this fight a metaphor for that? Francis, everyone's writing him off. He's never had a boxing fight, but he's recorded the hardest hit and punch in a Guinness World Record. He's there for the hardest hit and punch.
Yeah.
So one punch could change it, or could it not?
Well, I think it's important to highlight first and foremost that Francis has trained for the most part, well, not trained, but fought for the most part in 4-ounce gloves. He's learned a completely different discipline in the UFC, where most fighters tend to have their hands down behind their side, and there's not really the same emphasis on maintaining your guard like there is in boxing. So although at heavyweight boxing, it's 10-ounce gloves, which doesn't sound like a huge difference. 4 ounces, 10-ounce. I think Francis will notice the fatigue right from the start when he's having to pick those heavy gloves up to lift them up to his head to actually defend himself. He's not used to having to do that in a fight where you're so fatigued and you're having to worry about defending yourself with your gloves. He's not got the movement, the elusiveness to evade Fury's shots. So he's going to have to heavily rely on using his gloves to block most of those shots. I think in terms of Francis Ngannou landing a punch, I think he's more than capable of landing a punch. I mean, we've seen in some of Fury's most recent fights, even that third fight with Wilder, although it was massively entertaining, Fury has shown certain vulnerabilities towards this end of his career. So I think in that sense, Francis is more than capable of landing on him. But in terms of actually making a dent in Fury, I can't see how he does that. I mean, we've seen Fury, he's known for his powers of recovery. He can take a shot so well, and even if he does get knocked down, he tends to get straight back up within seconds. So, yeah, I don't think one punch will be a decisive factor in the fight. I think the accumulation of shots from Fury is what's going to win him, whether it goes a distance or he stops him halfway through. I think that is what's going to make the biggest difference.
Fury, because of what he did against Wilder, he stopped Wilder, a knockout boxer, and he says he's going to finish Francis under six rounds. And in terms of Francis, you're talking about there, he's going to feel it straight away. But when you've got Mike Tyson in your corner, mate, you must learn a lot. He says he's been training 4 months now, boxing. He's wanted Tyson Fury. He's actually been calling Tyson Fury out for the past 4 years, even when he was still in a contract with the UFC. That's sort of one of the factors in why the UFC released him. But Ngannou's wanted this fight, and now he's got Mike Tyson in his corner, which they were laughing about in the press conference because Tyson Fury is named after Mike Tyson. And now Mike Tyson's coaching someone to beat Tyson Fury. So it's some weird simulation we're all living in. But do you not think Mike Tyson being in his corner makes any difference?
Well, firstly, I do agree with you there. I think it's very weird that you've got Mike Tyson in the corner of Francis Ngannou, because he's almost gone over to the dark side now. He's training a UFC fighter to be a boxer. Also, Tyson Fury and Mike Tyson, like they've been on podcasts together. They've been shown on camera being all pally-pally behind the scenes. So I don't know whether, obviously, Fury's so strong mentally, but I don't know whether that's going to play a factor in what he thinks before the fight anyway. But yeah, to answer your question, I don't think Mike Tyson will be able to offer Francis Ngannou much in terms of being able to defeat Tyson Fury. I think you said he's been training boxing for 4 months. It takes a hell of a lot longer than that to even cause a heavyweight champion some problems. So
I mentioned it just because Francis, back I think 4 years ago, went on to Mike Tyson's podcast, and then they were talking about it, and I think Francis said that he told Mike Tyson, when I fight Tyson Fury, I want you to be my coach. And then when it happened, he gave Mike Tyson the call and was like, it's happening. Like, I'm going over to Saudi. Do you want to come with me, mate? Sort of thing. So, but what is next for both of them? I think I'm more interested to see what's next for Fury over Francis. But even Francis, what's next for him in terms of if he wins, if he loses? But yeah, we'll start with Fury.
I'm going Fury win. And one thing I will add is obviously Francis, he's not going to be terrible, because he's learned stand up. His striking in MMA is better than most. But the one thing to bear in mind about Fury, and this is not from a technical standpoint, but from just an athletic standpoint, his ability for those 12 rounds to set a hellacious pace that his opponents always struggle to deal with, I think is being slept on. And everyone's expecting him to outbox Francis Ngannou. That's inevitable. But as well as that, his gas tank and his endurance to just outwork Ngannou, I think, is something that's going to play out.
He deceives you a little bit where he comes out with this dad bod and like all 6 foot, 7, 8 of him, and then he puts you through 12 rounds. So it's like he's a freak of an athlete. Fury says he finishes in six rounds. Ngannou says he knocks him out in the sixth round. Oscar, it's time to put your neck out on the line.
Oh, I wasn't expecting to have to give a prediction, but I'll do my best here. I'll go with Fury says stopping him inside six, and Fury is the king of contradiction. He always contradicts himself. So I'm going to go Fury stops him between rounds 7 and 10.
Yeah, see, I was going to go similar, because I don't. I think for Fury, there's ways in which he can go about this fight. He can either go about this fight the way he says he's been telling everyone, and the way that sort of people sort of see him doing, and not necessarily knocking him out, but stopping Francis within within. I'd probably go earlier. I'd probably go. He could stop Francis if he really wanted to within 3 or 4 rounds. But it's if he wants to. And we see this now with Floyd Mayweather, where they get into these fights where they know they've won before the bell even rings, and they sort of play with their opponents for 12 rounds and just get out of there. So Fury could go that approach. For the MMA standpoint, there's a part of me which hopes Francis does some miracle, which I don't think is going to happen, but I can't lie, I would love to see it. But I'll go Fury, and I'll go, he stops him within 10 rounds. I don't know which round. It is very hard to call. But if we're both saying he's going to win, what's next for Fury after this? It surely is Alexander Usyk, right?
Well, that's exactly right. And obviously, with Riyadh season commencing, you've got this next fight against Usyk, which supposedly has been agreed. You've got Frank Warren, the promoter, who's almost boasting about the fact that he's gone over to the Middle East and has inked a deal with the Saudi Arabians to stage this fight. The only issue with that is the fact that Usyk keeps saying that he wants to fight Fury in December. He seems to think that this fight has to happen in December, and there's no other way. Fury fighting Ngannou this Saturday, it's a very quick turnaround to then go into a camp for Alexander Usyk, who's obviously a completely different style. He'll have to bring in sparring for southpaws. He'll have to probably, spend a lot more money on his training camp as well, which shouldn't be a problem for Fury, but it's just a completely different fight that he'll have to prepare for that. So I can't see in a million years it happening in December, but hopefully we get to see it at some point early next year, maybe Saudi Arabia. So
let me ask you this: do you believe Fury when he says he normally trains 6 weeks for a fight, but this fight camp he's trained 12 for Ngannou? When for Wilder, supposedly, he trained 6, and for his other championship fights. Do you believe him when he says that? Because when I hear that, I'm like, are you really? Really?
That is the biggest load of rubbish that's ever come out of his mouth. And that's a fair amount of stuff has been said by Fury over the years. This one takes a cake for me, because there's not a single boxer out there training for a world title fight that's doing it for 6 weeks, unless they get a last minute call up and they're like, look, you've got this opportunity, why not take it? You're going to spend, the best part of 12 weeks in a camp. And even before that, it's the mental preparation. Yeah, you're constantly thinking about the opponent. Even if you're not in full training camp, you're still ticking over in the gym with that opponent in mind. Mm. So it equates to about 15 to 20 weeks, but when it's all said and done, because the intensity of the training camp can only last so long. But then it's about the mental preparation that you do beforehand that obviously makes a big difference as well. So that's why Fury, the turnaround would just be way too quick for him to fight in December. I think he'll need a long time to prepare for someone like Alexander Usyk, who is obviously the biggest threat to his status at the minute as the lineal heavyweight world champion.
Yeah, I mean, if it is true what Fury's saying, he's showing massive respect to Francis Ngannou. And he kind of has shown massive respect throughout fight week in the past couple of weeks to Ngannou for just taking the fight, really. But for people listening to this pod who don't, for the more boxing fans and who aren't really into the MMA world, Francis Ngannou, before he left the UFC, was a killer. Like, let's not get this mistaken. I know everyone's saying he's going to lose and he's going to get pieced up by Fury and it's a joke of a fight, but Before he left the UFC, Francis Ngannou, he was a killer. This guy would mow through people, knocking them out so quickly. And then even in his last fight, his title defense, I believe it was against Cyril Gane, he wrestled Gane and he showed he had that sort of style about his fights as well. It was only because of a dispute in money between him and Dana White and the UFC. Francis thought he should be getting paid more than what he was on because he was a champion. And I think, to be honest, genuinely, most UFC fight fans agreed with Francis, where actually this guy's the champ, this guy's been knocking out his opponents, give him the money he deserved, and then we will maybe see the fight that everyone wanted to see in Francis and John Jones. But instead, we now live in this world where John Jones is at heavyweight, where we wanted him to be where Francis is, but Francis isn't there. So the UFC dropped the ball big time on that one. And it's not the first time they've done it with stars like that, and it probably won't be the last. But in terms of what's next for Francis after this fight on Saturday, I think, as we said, there's more questions with Fury than Francis, because I think most boxing and MMA fans actually respect Francis for taking this fight. They actually have no grievances with him because they know it's a massive payday for him. He deserves it considering what he was going through in the UFC and what he's been through coming over to France and, you know, his story and things like that. And it's really okay, if in an alternative universe, if he somehow beats Fury and wins, then we'll have to have another podcast episode just on Francis Ngannou in boxing. But let's just say for this purpose, he does lose like most people expect him to. It's then up to him really what he wants to do, because he's not really lost any credibility in boxing because he's fought Tyson Fury, one of the greatest. And it's I know a couple months ago he signed for the PFL. It's with Jake Paul's new influencer division type thing. So he might go back into that route. And all through fight week in the past couple of weeks, I've seen such a different Francis. I can't even tell you, like, this guy, he's still humble. And when he was in the UFC, he was humble and he was quiet. He was quite a quiet guy. And he was very, like, well-spoken, which he still is. But you can tell now, this is his bag. This is his big payday, big fight of his life, because he's in Saudi repping the shades, repping the jacket. He said he himself, he's made it. And I think when you get to that level as a fighter where you've dreamt of making this money, and clearly it's been one of his dreams to fight Tyson Fury. When you get to that point, what is next after that? Is retirement even a thing we should be talking about with Francis? Who knows? I mean, as you said, it's not the first event in Saudi and it definitely won't be the last. In terms of why Saudi Arabia, I know it's the money and it's everything around it, and it's the globalization over in Saudi and in terms of sports. Is this necessarily a bad thing? I know we touched on it a little bit at the intro about how the country and the area is now in the spotlight, but is this a bad thing? Are they sort of being dragged down by their history of ethics and their morals and their human rights? Where when do you get to a point where you go, come on, guys, we're trying to move on, we're trying to do better?
No, I think it's a difficult conversation. This is why a lot of media outlets have avoided it. Politically, it's not right. Ethically, it's not right. But I think people just have to accept that this is where the money is.
Yeah.
With boxing, you had HBO pull out of staging broadcasting fights in America a number of years ago. Now, more recently, you've had Showtime, a major player in the game, pull out of broadcasting boxing fights. So boxing's not got the same pull it once had in America. And that's ultimately where the money always was. Every single big fight throughout history was staged in Las Vegas with the beaming lights and obviously in these huge casinos that generate so much money.
Yeah.
But the money that was there once upon a time is no longer there, and that's why it's all moved over to Saudi Arabia.
We know they don't have the best human rights records. Yes, we know that the ethics and the morals and where the money is coming from might not be the greatest place. As you said, it's sort of because they have so much money and they're targeting the right athletes, going to happen. It's not a fact of, oh, they're just doing this and then it'll go away. I think it's sort of, if you talk about football, it's sort of the MLS used to do it with when they got over David Beckham and Pirlo, aging retired players who like people semi cared about. Saudi now in every sport are targeting. They not only have mass amount of money that we've never seen in any sport before, but they are also targeting the athletes that are still relevant, still in their prime. People still want to pay to watch. But I kind of get these football players and these boxers and whoever, if they want to take the bag, they can take it. Because I'm not going to sit here and say I wouldn't do that if I was in their position.
Yeah, and if they're open and honest about it, then people most likely won't have a problem with it, because as you say, that they're only human, and ultimately, regardless of where you come from, it's so difficult to turn down that amount of money. I think with Tyson Fury, you mentioned obviously certain fans not being happy with this fight, and if this was going to be Fury's last fight in boxing, I certainly wouldn't be happy either. So I think he's had one foot out the door for a while now, and he is having this fight with Ngannou. Then he's going to fight Usyk, and regardless of what happens in that fight, I think he'll just call it a day, because he would have made generational wealth for his family going forward, and his status would be cemented in the history books. I think that win that he had over Klitschko, the three Wilder fights, and possibly a win over Usyk, although that fight could again go either way. You've got five fights there that have cemented his legacy, really.
The thing is, I was just going to add to that, is I know a lot of MMA fans anyway are talking about how Francis deserves this payday. He didn't get treated well in the UFC, and you know what he's been through to get it. But does Tyson Fury also not deserve this payday? He's undefeated in 15 years, but he has beat the Wilder, the Klitschkos. Is this sort of a reason why you think he's taking this fight?
Yeah, I think he deserves it. I think he's paid his dues. So that fight that he had with Klitschko, and then people still mention it a lot, but no one really mentions it enough. And I think to this day, he still doesn't feel like he got the credit for that win. At the time, the media more or less sidelined him and didn't quite celebrate him as much as they did, for example, Anthony Joshua when he beat Klitschko.
Yeah.
So I think this Tyson Fury still has a bit of a chip on his shoulder following that win, because he doesn't feel like he got the recognition from the public that he deserved. So I feel like now, yeah, take the fight with Ngannou, get paid a load of money for it, and sail off into the sunset.
Is this a legacy fight for Fury? Will this... Because that's what he's saying. He's saying this is a legacy fight. And will we look back at this and be like, that was a very smart move by Tyson Fury?
I think we'll look back and say it was a very smart move in a financial sense. But no, I can't see a world where we look back on Fury and Ngannou and think, God, that was one of the marquee wins of his career. Like,
Imagine, unless he stops him within 10 seconds then. Even then.
Well, yeah, that'll be a spectacle. I think the spectacle of the event is what's going to transcend, basically, because as we said at the start of the podcast, there's an enormous amount of money being invested into this event. And I think it's a spectacle more than the substance.
It's sort of this thing of a MMA fighter, a boxer coming together, the intrigue, what's going to happen. We are going to, next week, we're going to do a whole episode on crossover fights and influencer boxing, as we had one last week. What are your opinions on this sort of crossover boxing, whether it's MMA or let's go MMA and boxing, and then we can talk about all the rest of the influence a lot next week?
Yeah, I think with MMA and boxing, we've seen it before with Mayweather, yeah. Which, let's be honest, no one's watching that fight back in a hurry. And I think, yeah, that sort of demonstrated that ultimately for an MMA guy to come into the boxing ring, it would take more than just one training camp to actually even be remotely competitive against one of the best to ever do it, yet alone a British champion, a European champion, or whatever level. It's I think it requires so much dedication, and it would be the exact same for a boxer to go to MMA and probably get absolutely pummeled by.
Well, funny you mention that. You say Fury only having a 6-week camp is one of the worst takes he's ever had. He actually said if they rematch that he would beat Francis in a cage in MMA, that he would actually, and I think that could top the statement earlier for worst Tyson Fury takes, because there is no way in chance. I know Fury has trained MMA a little bit with, I think, Darren Till. He trained a little bit back like a couple years ago, and I think he has talked about wanting to dabble in MMA, but there is no way he beats Francis Ngannou in a cage. That's just not happening.
But I
sort of agree with you where that Mayweather McGregor one was the blueprint for crossover boxing for future events, because promoters looked at that event and went, there's money to be made here. You get the fan base from MMA, you get the fan base from boxing. The old question of, oh, who's the bigger sport? Who's the better fighter? And obviously we all know it's not fair, because an MMA guy would beat a boxer in an MMA fight and vice versa. But it attracts the more sort of, I don't want to say casual fight fans, but it is. It attracts the tourists as a spectacle of to make an event out of it. Whereas actually, the actual skill and ability of the fight, isn't what we tend to expect from these sort of fights. And as we said, we're gonna speak in future episodes next week, actually, in fact, about these events, about how good are these influencers or these MMA guys actually crossing over into the sport. But that'll do it for episode one. It's been an absolute pleasure, Oscar. Thank you for joining me. And I'm very excited for future episodes. So make sure you check out, I think your article's up.
I've just got an article up with Rexana Begum, who I interviewed. I mentioned her earlier in the podcast. She's a Bangladeshi Muslim boxer. It was a really interesting story to tell, but that's been up for a bit now.
Check out all the articles on the Sports Gazette, and thanks for listening.